Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. It's Friday, the 28th of April. You're listening to KFM. It's Caoimhe Harney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Peter Boland, Director of Alliance for Insurance Reform. Policyholders here in the Republic are paying many multiples in insurance compared to what Northern Ireland counterparts are paying. Then we'll speak to Stephen Moffat, National Policy Manager at Barnardos, calling on local authorities to give families facing eviction more certainty when securing emergency accommodation. We'll speak to Dr. Primrose Freestone, Associate Professor in Clinical Microbiology at the University of Leicester. It's gross. Your mobile phone is dirtier than your toilet seat. And then we'll speak to Breed Brophy, Chairperson of Athy Community Arts Centre. A number of events are taking place in the centre over the next few days and weeks. If you want to get in touch with the show, 0458 98 999. That's the landline number here. If you want to email me, it's studio@kfmradio.com. Or if you want to text me, you can do so.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, the Alliance for Insurance Reform has published a set of case studies of liability insurance premiums in the Republic and comparable operations in Northern Ireland and in Germany, which show the extent to which liability policy holders in the Republic of Ireland are being taken for a ride by some insurers. Well, I'm joined now on the line by Peter Boland. He's Director of Alliance for Insurance Reform. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Peter, I suppose it's quite serious for people who have to pay out this money. And if you want to go through, firstly, a few of the case studies, because they are quite shocking.
OK, so I'll give you a couple of examples. Basically, what we did was we had got a lot of feedback about businesses who knew businesses north of the border and seemed to be paying a lot less. So we started to do some research on it. And essentially what we wanted to do was find examples that were broadly comparable. So similar sized pubs, say, in similar sized towns with similar types of business profile and similar kinds of turnover, so that they would be directly comparable. So we found, for example, a pub in Northern Ireland is paying €2,679, so about €2,500 in their annual insurance premium. In the Republic, a similar pub is paying €17,500. So that's a multiple of 6.5 times higher in the Republic for similar businesses. Then you take a caravan park, one in the north, one in the south, there's a difference of 4.8. A community circus north of the border compared to one in the Republic, the one in the Republic is paying 6.4 times more in insurance. Thatched cottages, if you can get cover for a new thatched cottage in the Republic, it will cost you 1% of the value of the building. So that would be approximately €3,000 and upwards. And in the north, you can get cover for the same type of building for €749. So that's a multiple of 4. And then an interesting one, because we couldn't find a direct comparison in Northern Ireland, it was for Tree Rope Adventure Parks. In the Republic of Ireland compared to in Germany. And Zippet, which has three parks in Farran and Cork, in Tobraden and Dublin, and in Lochy and Roscommon, they're currently paying a combined annual premium of €250,000. And the German company that they deal with on licensing has 6 Tree Rope Adventure Parks in Germany, and between them they pay €3,000.
Wow, so 3,000 altogether?
Altogether, so 500 per park, compared to for the three in Ireland, 250,000, which is a little bit over 80,000 each, compared to €500. So that's eye watering. But the ones that are really interesting are the ones in the north, because the north has a very similar jurisdiction, very similar approach in terms of personal injury claims. The risk profile is very similar. And by and large, you won't find a place that's more directly comparable to the Republic and Northern Ireland. And yet they are paying many multiples less than we are. And essentially, the only difference between the two, the only material difference, is that there's still plenty of competition in the north. particularly because of Brexit, we've had serious problems getting cover in those sort of sectors over the last number of years. And what would appear to be the case is that insurers are taking advantage of that lack of supply. And so we get constant stories back from members about having two underwriters prepared to quote, losing one of them, and then the premium mysteriously doubles or trebles. And when they query it, they're told, oh, well, that's just a commercial reality. So it has nothing to do with risk. It has nothing to do with turnover. It is all to do with the ability of an insurer to charge whatever the hell they like.
Yeah, it's definitely doesn't seem fair. And like you were saying there, Peter, like you're absolutely sure that, you know, the claims in Northern Ireland in comparison to the South are fairly comparable, like nothing different really there. And yet then if, you know, you take for the pub example, like, you know, if you've a small business maybe in rural Ireland where you're paying 17,000, 18,000 for insurance in comparison to 3,000 up the north or just under 3,000, like that's huge, isn't it?
It is huge. I mean, clarify on that one. That was in a good sized town.
Okay.
But say you took that into a rural situation and a pub is paying say 5,000 to 7,500 for their insurance. For a small pub that only opens maybe Thursday to Sunday, that's a massive take out of what they're making. You know, nobody's making millions out of small, marginal rural pubs anymore, and yet they're having to pay these massive bills. And the key point out of this work that we've done is that there is no comparison anywhere else. And that was underlined by the heads of the European Association for Outdoor Employers during the week, who said that this problem is 100% Irish. It does not exist anywhere else. And so it needs to be resolved. And there is a fix for it. And it involves government. Now, you've got to give a lot of credit to government. They have, in cooperation with the opposition, with the judiciary, with the Gardaí, and obviously with policyholders, they have moved mountains over the last 2 years to get serious reforms through, but they are not delivering reductions on liability insurance. And so there are a couple of things that they need to do right now. The first is to put unrelenting pressure on incumbent insurers who are now taking the benefits of all those reforms and putting them in their back pocket. That's very clear to us at this stage. Government have huge leverage with them because they need government in order to function in this country. And so government need to turn that leverage into reductions from the incumbents. They also clearly need to get additional insurers in and provide extra competition. And they've acknowledged that for several years now. So in December 2020, they set up an insurance competition office in the Department of Finance. It has not delivered yet, and it needs to deliver. We need additional competition in. And the third thing that needs to happen, particularly in sectors like thatched cottages or many of the voluntary and community sectors that are affected, is they need to put in a fix for sectors that simply cannot get cover. There are so many very small sectors that are just being abandoned by insurance companies at the moment because they don't deliver enough profit. And government is going to have to react to that and put a mechanism in place to make sure they're covered.
Absolutely. If we look at the comparison with Germany then and the adventure parks, because we have heard about this a lot, and one of the examples that you gave here was Squirrel Scramble Tree Adventure Park in Kilruddery in Bray, of course in Wicklow, paying €60,000 per year for insurance. In comparison to Germany, what are the differences there? Like, why is it so much cheaper?
Well, there are no differences. This is the bizarre thing about it. And the German operators and European operators in general will say that we have best practice in terms of risk management, in terms of health and safety, to the point where we're nearly taking all the risk out of our operations. So, like, it would be very sad if adventure parks ended up having no adventure, because it was just too risky. And this is one of the serious dangers in Ireland, that, you know, we're closing down community playgrounds. We're making the ones that are staying open so safe that there is no risk. And so kids grow up with no real ability to assess risk. And if they're falling onto a rubberized surface and they're getting up and walking away, then they have no idea what playing around with heights involves and the kind of risks associated with it. And this has been acknowledged as a major issue in the likes of Germany, where they're trying to persuade playground manufacturers to put more risk into the playgrounds now, so that kids don't end up completely blind to the kind of risk that they're putting themselves in. And so that's the danger of the way that we're going at the moment. And in fairness to Squirrel Scramble and Zippit and all the other operators, they run incredibly safe operations. Now, they are subject to claims very often by people who aren't even their customers, who have just walked onto the ground and just aren't even looking where they're going. And unfortunately, that is a piece of reform that we're still waiting on. What we have found many times over the last few years is that adventure centres and other organisations can be absolutely liable regardless of the circumstances of an accident. And Minister Simon Harris is currently pushing through a reform in that area, and we're waiting on it to get through the Shannon and be enacted. It hasn't happened yet. It's a matter of great urgency. But it's one of the many reforms which has either happened or is happening. But the last missing piece in the whole process is for insurers to say, well, okay, you've got the risk under control. The personal injury industry in Ireland is under control. Everything is working in our favour. So now we're going to start delivering reductions which are meaningful and reflect the way that Irish society has changed over the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, definitely. I see here in your press release that Bill Kremen, the managing director of Zippit Tree Adventure Parks down in Cork, said that one of our German colleagues said recently that we pay for what we pay for insurance would cover the insurance costs of the entire sector, high ropes specifically in Germany, which is really shocking. In terms of claims in Germany, you're saying that they're on par with what people would claim here in Ireland, are they?
Well, no, what the Germans will tell us is that if someone falls over, they get up and they move on.
Right.
And that is...
Is it a culture here,
historically,
then?
That has become a cultural thing. I don't believe that Irish people are more disposed to claiming than anybody else. But historically, there has been a pot of gold, two pots of gold at the end of the rainbow. So there were massive amounts of money available for someone who suffered from a minor soft tissue injury. You know, literally you just fall and scrape your knee and you could make a claim. And likewise, there was a pot of gold in terms of the legal fees available for processing such a claim. But that has changed quite dramatically over the last 2 years. And we're seeing the number of claims down by 42% over the last 5 years, according to the central bank. We're seeing the amount being handed out in settlements on awards starting to drop dramatically as well.
Okay,
and that needs to be reflected in our premiums.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You would think then that the premiums would have come down, but we'll have to wait and see. What way are the government commenting on this at this time, Peter?
So, we have found the government just a little bit too soft with insurers over the last while. To be honest, they tend to tiptoe around them because they seem to be afraid that the insurers will up and leave. It's very unlikely that a commercially minded insurer will up and leave a profitable sector in a profitable country, and things have improved so much for them over the last number of years. So, you know, we often get the history of insurers in Ireland thrown at us and that there's been so many failures. But when you look at those failures closely, the vast majority of them are down to things like incompetence or mismanagement or large multinationals making policy decisions abroad, which led to changes in Ireland. So we don't buy for one moment that Ireland is just this death trap for insurers where they're only coming in for charitable purposes. They're coming in to make money. The vast majority of the major underwriters who have come into this country are still here. And there is money to be made in this country. But right now, it is not being passed on. And if it is not passed on, what we're facing into is a one-off shakedown where the resources of small businesses like adventure centres or pubs or caravan parks are transferred to large insurance companies, and government cannot stand by and allow that to happen.
Okay, Peter Boland, Director of Alliance for Insurance Reform. Thanks very much, Peter, for joining us. Some shocking figures there. I'd love to know if anyone is a Kildare business owner or of course, a local business in and around the Kildare area, what you're paying for insurance. Of course, you don't have to give your name, but I would love to know because there is a huge difference between what businesses in the south of or the Republic of Ireland are paying and up in the north.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, Barnardos are calling on local authorities to give families facing eviction more certainty when securing emergency accommodation. I'm joined on the line now by Stephen Moffat. He's National Policy Manager at Barnardos. Good afternoon, Stephen. Stephen, just tell us a little bit where this is coming from. I suppose on the back of latest surveys, and we know that the homeless figures will be out tomorrow, which I'm sure probably will not look good.
Yeah, just off the back of what we're really hearing in our services, what families are reporting to staff across the country, is that more and more families are having issues with housing, with homelessness, and just a level of concern and anxiety amongst parents around entering emergency accommodation, those who know that they will be evicted, those who are entering homelessness accommodation. So yeah, real concerns about that, and that the fact that we know that the number of children living in emergency accommodation at the moment are at historic highs.
We have reports in here, you know, often daily, definitely weekly, you know, children made to change school in the middle of changing accommodation, or, you know, living in cramped accommodation where they maybe can't even cook because they're in a B&B or they're in a hotel. Is that mirrored in your surveys?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a real concern. You know, we don't think any child should have to move school, you know, all suddenly during, you know, a really important time in their lives because they've been offered emergency accommodation sometimes 20, 30 kilometres away from where they were living. Don't really think that's acceptable, particularly, you know, families who might have three or four children go to different schools. The level of upheaval and trauma that can cause to a child can last a lifetime. So we've real concerns about that. And then in terms of, you know, a lot of accommodation, emergency accommodation in certain parts of the country are very cramped conditions. You know, we know families who have, you know, three children, teenage children, spending, you know, days in one single hotel room together. You know, and that can go on for months and months on end.
We hear this here in KFM as well, that until a family is actually homeless, they are finding it difficult to secure emergency accommodation because no one will talk to them until they're actually homeless. You want foreplanning in this area, don't you, Stephen?
Yeah, and we know that it's something that local authorities can't do by themselves and need support from you know, central government around this. But we do need to build going forward into the future. We can't you know, stick with the status quo, in which, you know, we've too many examples of, you know, particularly Munders that we're working with, knowing that they're going to be evicted without a house with two or three children, and they're literally counting down the days. Their anxiety is growing, getting more stressful. They can't prepare. They think they're worried that, you know, the emergency accommodation that they will be offered, they won't, their children won't be able to stay at school. They're worried about childcare. It can affect their employment. It can have a big impact on their healthcare as well. They might have to get new GPs. The children might be engaged with additional support services. They might lose that support service. So all these worries and all these huge concerns that parents that we deal with regularly are happening because all the help that they get is on that day that they're actually out on the street. So we know it's very difficult for local authorities, but we can't let that just be an excuse for the status quo just to remain in place.
Mm-hmm. At a very minimum, I suppose, when children are moved, and I think you'll appreciate, Stephen, there has been an influx of asylum seekers and refugees into this country because of, you know, war and famine, etc. But I suppose, and of course, they need to be accommodated. So if people have to move and the only emergency accommodation is, you know, much further away than where their school is, you want at least that transport is free for these students. Is that right?
Yeah, so that every opportunity is utilised to make sure that children, if they are moved to further distances from school, can get to school as reasonably easy as possible, that transport is free for those children. You know, we've heard of examples whereby children have moved long distances. Parents have then applied for a free school transport scheme, but not being eligible because they haven't met a certain timeline or deadline. So we think, look, exceptions have to be made in those circumstances at an absolute minimum.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, if you're facing eviction or if you're homeless and you're in emergency accommodation, one would imagine that driving perhaps in some cases 50 kilometres to the school is not going to be viable, and especially in this cost of living crisis, Stephen.
No, absolutely not. You know, parents, we know that we're supporting in many places around the country are really conscious about the huge increases to fuel costs. They're conscious about using their car, their affordability of doing that day, you know, even on just on weekends, going day trips. So it's really not an option for them to use it, you know, day in, day out to drop their children to school. There needs to be something done about that to take at least one of the stresses away from parents as they move into emergency accommodation.
Okay, finally, Stephen, in the immediate effect, like with immediate effect, what would you like to see done by local authorities and, I suppose, the government?
So I think, you know, certainly something needs to be done about the standard of emergency accommodation. We know that there are some places where emergency accommodation is better than others, but we know that there's very, you know, there's expectations that have a minimum standard of home that children should be entitled to grow up in. We don't think that, you know, those standards being applied to emergency accommodation where children can spend, you know, over a year of their lives living in. So we really need to tackle that, need to have a look at, you know, what can be done for parents in advance of becoming homeless and the supports that can be offered by local authorities. We know that the issue around, as I mentioned, around school, that there should be free school transport for children as if they do move into emergency accommodation. So we think there's measures the government can take, and we can't just sit back and wait for, you know, more houses to be built. You know, there's too many children in emergency accommodation now, and these problems will exist even when housing prices might subside, whenever that will be, because there will still be children sent to live in emergency accommodation. So we need to improve that situation now, as well as trying to improve the situation for children living in hidden homelessness.
Now, the truth about your mobile phone, well, unfortunately, it is dirtier than your toilet seat. I'm joined now on the line by Dr. Primrose Freestone. She's Associate Professor in Clinical Microbiology at the University of Leicester. Good afternoon, Primrose.
Good afternoon to you too.
Primrose, I didn't think I could get more of a shock from the last time that you were on and you were telling us about jacuzzis, but this one is even nearly worse because most people have phones, don't they?
Well, the point is, though, that you wash your toilet seat quite regularly, okay, but how often do you actually clean your mobile phone? You wash your hands regularly, and yet you still don't clean your mobile phone, which is touched by your hands, and you might take your phone into the toilet. Mm. So, frankly, my mobile phones are well colonised. They have on them the bacteria and viruses that you have on your hands.
Yeah.
And even though your hands might be clean when you touch your phone, you've not washed or cleaned your phone. So there you go.
Your phone is an extension of your hand, especially in these modern times. We always have our phones on, texting, ringing, sending emails. So really what you're saying is you have to be sanitising your phone. Like, what's the best way to do that?
Well, the thing is, we're still within a pandemic, okay? Mm. And we're told to, and we recognise the need to wash our hands, okay? Because hands to mouth are a route for infection. So in terms of cleaning your phone, well, it's recommended by the Centre for Disease Control and other authorities that you should clean it every day. So therefore, using an antiseptic wipe or one of the thicker alcohol solutions, and it has to be at least 70% alcohol, avoiding the sort of connection ports and so on, wiping down the keyboard and the screen at least once a day should actually keep the numbers of bacteria and viruses down. But the thing is, you've got to keep on doing it because it'll just get refilled with germs.
Right. It's not a nice thing to think about. The covers on our phones then as well, I suppose we should probably take those off, give them a rinse and then wipe down the phone as well, because I'd imagine there's going to be as many germs on the covers and caught underneath that too then, Primrose, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. And also your phone charger, give that a clean as well occasionally.
Oh, God.
Now, luckily, most of us have got very robust immune systems. And as a species, man has actually only been lived in hygienic environments probably about the last century or so. So our immune systems can cope with a lot of dirt. And indeed, you know, it's quite beneficial to developing the right response to pathogens. But the point is, it has been recognised that mobile phones can be a reservoir, a source of infection. And particularly since we're still in a pandemic, who knows how many people actually might have caught a COVID infection from their phones, because Phones are made of plastic, and viruses like COVID-19 can persist on plastic for up to several days, as can flu, as can other viruses like norovirus that give you a very upset stomach. So the thing is, particularly if your phone's handled by others, especially children, give it a clean, okay? And I think that might actually sort of make you more reassured in terms of what you're carrying, because nobody likes the thought of carrying something that's dirty. And, and let's face it, how many people would touch a toilet seat and not wash their hands afterwards?
You would hope none, but we'd have to
go. You would hope not, definitely, yes.
What kind of bacteria and viruses are we seeing on phones then?
Anything that might be on your hands, okay, and from surfaces that you might have touched. So particularly enteric bacteria, the ones associated with fecal matter, poo, all right? So E. coli, Enterococcus. Anything that might actually be your fecal matter. Also, anything you might have picked up from food or the environment, okay, touch your phone, it will be deposited on there. I mean, the reason you wash your hands in your first place is not to get rid of your own bacteria, because your skin is lead and it's got bacteria and fungi and other microbes pretty much on all the kind of layers, but to get rid of the microorganisms, the bacteria and the fungi that can cause disease that you pick up from the environment and potentially from other people. Mm. So hand washing is absolutely key. Then it seems to be a kind of contradiction in terms if you then touch a dirty mobile phone.
Yeah, and the 2019 survey found that most people use their phones on the toilet, so I suppose it's not really surprising that they're so dirty.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Although I don't, by the way. I mean, if I'm in the toilet and my phone rings, I will, unless it's from home, I won't touch it. And then afterwards, I'll try and remember to sanitise the phone. I'm not perfect, I'm a microbiologist. But I think the reason we get away with it, as I said, we've got robust immune systems. But hygiene is not a bad thing, and especially since we, you know, are more aware of potentially acquiring infections from other people and our environments.
I'd love to hear.
Cleaning the phone, I think, is not a bad thing.
I'd love to hear from our listeners as well.
Children are playing with a phone. I mean, and they pick up something from that. That is potentially avoidable.
I'd love to hear from our listeners. Do you use your phone on the toilet? 0833 97 97 97, and we'll see what the consensus is. Primrose, I suppose moving away from the phone, obviously that's the main thing here. But as a microbiologist, would you say, you know, you hear people that, you know, wrap their children in cotton wool and they're always sick. Would you say that we do need to be exposed to some level of germs? Is that what you're saying?
What people are doing in terms of lifestyle, and they're healthy and don't acquire lots of infections, the way that they're living is possibly fine. There might come a time when their immune systems are less robust, when you might need to rethink hygiene. But at the same time, mobile phones haven't been around that long, and we don't know what their role might be in transmitting infections. And I think, you know, safety comes first. And given that we know what's on people on our phones, giving them a wipe down, as you give your toilet seat a wipe down, is not a bad thing.
Okay, would you let your child or a child have a random mobile phone and walk around and put it in their mouth?
Well, if your child touched a toilet seat, okay, which is cleaned often, and a mobile phone, which is not cleaned often, frankly, I think the toilet seat's possibly a better option in terms of the number of microbes present. But having said that, again, we don't know what the role is in terms of transmitting infection, but we know that it can. So safety first, I would say.
Safety first. I wonder, would people out there let their child lick a toilet seat if they do let their child use a phone? That is the big question. It's so interesting.
I would hope not.
Yeah, you would hope not. But like, I mean, look, if they're going to use a phone, then it, like you're saying there, it's obviously the same thing or worse. Dr. Primrose Freestone, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. We'll have you on again with the next disgusting or shocking thing that you'll tell us. I suppose there's no real...
I think you should think, you know, does anybody ever clean their laptop keyboards out?
Yeah, I actually do try and do it, but like I wouldn't do it every day. Like I'd only do it every couple of weeks. Like I don't know, do many people do that? Would you do it every day?
No, I don't do my laptop keyboard every day, although I do wipe it down quite a lot.
Okay.
No, I actually do it to stop it becoming clogged up with crumbs, because like most people, I do tend to eat when I'm actually working on the computer, which you're not supposed to. And that's another thing as well, eating and then touching your mobile phone. You're just leaving food for the bacteria that are living there to eat.
Absolutely. Okay, Dr. Primrose Freestone, Associate Professor in Clinical Microbiology at the University of Leicester. Thanks very much for your time.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Welcome back. Now, I'm joined on the line by Breed Brophy. She's chairperson of Athy Community Arts Centre. And there's a number of events taking place this weekend that Breed is going to tell us about. Good afternoon, Breed.
Caoimhe, hello. Hi, how are you? Caoimhe, I'm actually vice chairperson, with Dave Day is actually the actual chairperson.
Okay, apologies.
So yeah, no, I just wouldn't.
You don't want to steal his thunder, yeah.
No.
What's happening in Athy, Breed, this weekend?
Well, tonight we have a piece of drama. It is written and directed by Paul Winters. And there's four great actors. There's Luke Collins, Richard McWilliams, David Rest and Neil Seary. And that's on at 8 o'clock tonight. People can come along on the door and there will be tickets available. Tomorrow then we have, it's in conjunction with DCU, Age Friendly University. It's what they call intergenerational, it's World Intergenerational Week. And their slogan is never too young, never too old. So we have tomorrow, it's a willow weaving taster workshop where people can come in and see Beth Murphy doing the weaving with the willow. And this is part of sort of the bigger picture of Bridges 1500. We've got funding for a project. So this is kind of the lead in to, you know, encourage people and introduce it to people. So that's on from 11 to 1 tomorrow.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And so anyone is allowed to go to that. Breed, is there a charge
drop
for
in,
it?
Cup of tea? No, drop it. As I said, that is funding from the Kildare County Council,
okay.
The Bridges 1500 fund. And there's lots of excitement rising about that now. So we're very happy to be part of it all.
Lovely. Is there anything else happening this weekend, Breed, or when is the next event?
Well, we have an evening with Oscar Wilde. It's compiled and performed by Richard Lynch. And Richard was with us before with a lovely piece, From the Shoulders Down. So this, it says, to transport yourself back in time, share Wilde's sparkling humour and wit and his tragic downfall. From the picture of Dorian Gray, the importance of being earnest, and the ballad of Reading Jail. So people who are like the Oscar Wilde stuff, that's on the 5th of May at 8 o'clock.
The 5th of May. Okay, so that's next,
Thursday, isn't it? Friday. And something then in between times, which you're actually hosting, we had a recording there in the Arts Centre of John McKenna's Stories from a Small Town. And they're going out on air now live with you on Wednesday next, or after 2 o'clock.
Absolutely. So, the 3rd of May.
That's the 5th. Is it the 3rd of May?
The 5th of May.
You're right. Is it Wednesday? Probably Friday's the 5th, you're right. It's Wednesday the 3rd.
Between 2 and 3, so people can tune in to KFM here.
You
hear it going out live. There's many, many great things. The evening with Oscar Wilde, then, is there a charge for that, Breed?
Yeah, there's tickets on sale for that, and they're in the Winkles, and they're in the Lions Club bookshop at the minute. Winkles. And people can inquire. We're on Facebook, and we have a website at High Community Arts Centre.com, and they can you know, contact us there. But you know, if people want to come on the night, just come along. You know, if said, oh, I'm not sure, just come along.
They'll be able to pay cash on the door if they need to.
They'll be able to pay cash on the door. And very soon we will have a new website. It's almost ready, and people will be able to hopefully book a seat there then. And, you know, we'll have a facility for a card payment, you know.
Okay.
All this new. So the art centre, like, it's a community art centre, and it's the work is done by a committee, and now we have support from the local local community employment scheme. And so it's there's a loads of stuff. There's Kildare Dance Project coming up. Oisín or Oscar Fitzgerald and his band, they're going to be there on the 19th of May. We have a young lady coming from Nashville. She's going to be there on the, at the end of May as well. So it's buzzing. And of course, there's a lovely, it's an ongoing thing we have. It's called the Waiting Room Session. Okay. And that's it's for young up-and-coming artists. And our next one of that now is going to be on at the end of May. And, you know, if people would like to showcase themselves there, they can audition. They could be singers, musicians, you know, comedians, a small piece of drama. And it's just, it's to give them a stage for their work and to, you know, we promote it for them. So that's a very successful thing that's been running now since, oh, it's a year now.
Okay, so the most, I suppose you're doing great work down there in Athy, in the community centre, and it keeps going from strength to strength, and a number of things coming up. But the big one, I suppose, on tomorrow that people might want to get to is between 11 and 2. It's free of charge to attend, and it is the willow weaving, and there'll be a person there giving classes, won't there?
Yeah, that's on from 11 to 1. And Caoimhe, just could we just remember, please, and just to say hello to Celine Garvey, who we spoke to many times on KFM, and she's an absolute legend, and she was such admiration for her, and it's just like a shout out to her. I see her there on Twitter today, and she's gone home from hospital. So we really are sending all our love to her and wishing her, you know, all the very best.
Absolutely, and we echo that here in KFM. Everyone is behind Celine Garvey, and I think the whole of Kildare is behind Celine Garvey.
Yeah,
many people will know her. And she's a shining light, a breath of fresh air, breed, isn't she?
Yes, she's a wonder, so she is. So anyway, we'd sending her all our love.
Thank you very much. That is Breed Brophy, yes, Vice Chairperson of Athy Community Arts Centre, with that news that the willow weaving is taking place from 11 until 1 p.m. at Athy Community Arts Centre tomorrow. So 11 till 1, it's free of charge if you'd like to attend. And of course, Breed Brophy there sending her regards to Celine Garvey, out of hospital at the moment, and hopefully she will make a quick and speedy recovery, and we wish you all the best, Celine.